Welcome to Betrayal Recovery Radio, the official podcast of APSATS, the Association of Partners of Sex Addict Trauma Specialists, hosted by Dr. Jake Porter. APSATS is a nonprofit organization providing professional training and compassionate support to partners affected by problematic sexual behavior and betrayal trauma. In each episode, Dr. Jake guides a conversation of enlightening insights and practical tools to empower those affected by sex addiction and betrayal trauma to use their voices and live their values. The mission of Betrayal Recovery Radio is to offer hope to those in need of healing and growth to those moving through grief. And now, here's your host, Dr. Jake Porter.
Welcome to yet another episode of Betrayal Recovery Radio. I am your host, Dr. Jake Porter. Today, we are going to pick up on our conversation with Fran Hopwood, an APSATS certified partner coach in the UK. In this conversation, really meant to honor her late husband, Richard Butler. I introduced Fran at length in the intro for the first part of this conversation, the last episode of the podcast. And so you can hear her full bio there. But in the meantime, just remind you that she's a highly trained APSATS partner coach, trained in disclosure work, couples work, lots of things. But she works from not just her professional training, but her own personal experience as one who's been affected by betrayal in two marriages before the discovery in her last marriage with her husband, Richard, who went on to become the very first European male to be certified with APSATS as they both became professional recovery workers. And so we're going to get to that conversation as quickly as possible. I do want to remind you all that the Association of Partners of Sex Addicts Trauma Specialists, that is APSATS, offers so many wonderful professional trainings for those who are or desire to work with those affected by betrayal. Lots going on. You can go to APSATS.org to find those out. Jeannie Vatuni, our president, is going to do a presentation on July 7th, Sex Addiction Abstinence Contracts, what partners and those working with partners need to know. Then August the 4th, a panel with several folks on it, Successful Clinician Coach Collaboration for Betrayed Partners. Kim Petroni is doing a workshop in September, The Partner's Role in Couples Work. Jessica Edens is going to be back doing a two-day training on betrayed family support for children and families. That's at the end of September. All the way up through a couple of big events coming up that I want you to know about. APSATS 2023 Conference, Trauma-Informed Care for Partner Betrayal. That is November the 1st through the 3rd, all online. And then the Multidimensional Partner Trauma Model Training will be held again November 14th through 17th. Find out about all of these at APSATS.org. And now let's continue our conversation with Fran Hopwood. Yes, that's the man I knew. And so as I'm listening, Fran, I'm thinking about you saying earlier that at the beginning you saw him regress, you saw him go into that more childlike state, you know, even with, you know, the covering of his head and the shrinking down and getting small. And what I'm hearing is through the recovery process, you watched him grow up into a man.
Absolutely.
You watched him mature.
I did.
Yeah, and it didn't that's mean that so it was, powerful.
It was powerful. It was. And I, you know, I'm grateful in a way that there was this trauma in his background. And it was deep. It was emotional neglect. It was violence at home. It was sexual abuse from a head teacher who was a minister and a family friend. Mm. You know, it was oh, lots wow. of stuff. And I guess he'd always been vulnerable. It had even happened in his adult life that I didn't know about, that he'd been sexually taunted by people he worked with. And he was so socially awkward because he didn't trust men in particular, I think. So, you know, it was.
Yeah.
it made sense for what happened. It didn't excuse it, because I still felt that he made his choices, but I made my choice to stay in the marriage. And that choice was not easy for me, because I was a black and white thinker. I very much, you know, betrayal, end of marriage. You know, I'd done it twice before, betrayal, end of marriage. Give up on it. But this was different. And I guess that's where this whole process that we went through changed me as well. That I started to develop a different compassion. I kind of think my early thought was sexually abused, get over it. You know, resilient, you just get over it. But I've learned a lot. I've had to learn.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And so you each had your own healing process, your own recovery happening. And like you just said, you made a choice that you were going to stay in the marriage. Now, I'm certain that was in part based on what you were seeing him do, the commitment you were seeing him live out. But as you made that choice, okay, I'm going to stay in this marriage, what were the difficult aspects of rebuilding the relationship between you?
Yeah. I think, you know, because we had access to sort of early books and early, you know, 12-step stuff, there was stuff we didn't agree with. And we were brave enough to say, we don't believe in this codependency thing. That's out. We don't believe this. We've got a disease, either of us. We don't have that. We didn't believe in the own side of the street. We knew that we didn't want any secrets. We knew that we had to be open with each other. And we knew that we had to be intentional. And that was huge.
How did you know that? That's an amazing thing, because, yeah, yeah. That's so powerful, Fran, because when I work with couples, so often, you know, they've been to more traditional sort of programs and models that have that my side of the street, your side of the street, that kind of mentality more. And then, you know, my paradigm, Fran, where I don't agree. And I have a couple centered approach. And that is what I hear so many partners say, is they knew in their gut that other stuff wasn't right. And I just, to me, that is such a powerful reality. And I want to highlight that, because I know a lot of the people who are probably listening and watching us right now, that's their experience also. You're not alone. Yeah. Keep looking for the right support and do what Fran and Richard did. Throw out what doesn't fit. Find the good pieces, right? Find the nuggets of gold, but throw out what doesn't work for you. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. What other difficult aspects of rebuilding the relationship came up for you?
I think we had to be creative, because we never had a couples therapist. Apart from the work we did with Milton, we never did any couples therapy. We did it all by ourselves, which meant picking books, taking different aspects. And it was like, you know, the layers. Oh, we've done that. Oh, there's something else to work on. Oh, what's attachment about? Oh, forgiveness? How do we do that? You know, it was all of that. But we started small. We established rituals. You know, breakfast was sacrosanct. Mm. We had breakfast together. We lit a candle. We had flowers on the table, and we had Mirror of Intimacy. You know, Alexander Katarakis' book, and we used as a devotional. And we did it every day for 3 years. We just went over and over it.
Wow!
Missed out the ones we didn't like, but every day we just did that. And it was just a way of getting Richard to talk deeper, because for him, it was difficult to have deep conversations. We used poetry and music because I like words and he's a musician. So, you know, we learned that listening to songs, I listened to the words, he listened to the music. So he taught me what he was listening to, and I taught him what I was listening to. And that allowed us to sort of dig into that.
Beautiful.
And we stumbled by accident. I found in order to get some peace, one of the things I did, I started going to Buddhist meditation. It just happened to be somewhere I could walk to, where I could go. And it happened to be in the Quaker Meeting House. And the Quaker Meeting House just happened to have a mindfulness course on, first time it's ever run here. So we went together and we did 8-week course. And I just thought it would help Richard with, you know, the way that his brain was struggling. So he fell asleep the first 2 weeks and snored on the floor. But you know, it got to be absolutely central to his recovery. And he never gave it up. He never gave up that kind of doing that mindfulness work. And it made such a difference to him to be in the present and not have that busy mind, you know, trying to, yes, to take away his attention. So, and it's just wonderful to see now that it's kind of being plugged everywhere as a tool. So I think we were very lucky that we stumbled across that, you know.
Wow.
I just think somehow there was a God thing. There were so many synchronicities, so many, you know, we found the right people at the right time in the right place.
Yeah, Fran, if you're okay going there, you've mentioned several times, you talked about not having a spirituality, y'all not having a faith, but you've also now mentioned something being a God thing. And where was that brought in? How has that shaped the story, that element?
I suppose it started with higher power. What's this higher power thing? And, you know, for me, I used the word hope at the beginning because it had an H and a P in it. And then gradually moved that to some, it was good. And then it kind of got to being the universe, and then it got to being all that there is, you know. And then, of course, I was being exposed to the Quakers and the Buddhists. And then I did Door of Hope with Donna Dixon. And that kind of, I mean, Donna was just lovely. She just kept saying things to me like, God's chasing after you, Fran. He's having such fun with you. And I'd already met Kat by then, and I knew what Kat's heart was. And it was like all these Christian people were coming into my life. And Richard was finding his own journey. He did some work. He started reading Richard Rohr's books and just found them fascinating. And it just gradually happened. And then we went to an in-person conference that Naked Truth were running in Cardiff. It was called the P-Word Conference. I think you've spoken at one of the P-Word conferences.
Yes. Oh, yes.
It's online.
I
so
have.
It's all about porn. And that was where Richard and I became Christians, at that conference. So
wow.
It was an incredible,
that's amazing,
journey.
You know, this really set your lives on a whole different trajectory, right?
Absolutely.
And I was trying to remember when we first met, Fran. And was it when y'all were here in Houston for the CSASE conference, or had we met before then, maybe online?
You and I had met at the SASH conference just as Kat was starting the Naked Truth stuff. She and I went together to the SASH conference, and you were talking about grief, and we used your grieving, some of the things you talked about, to do that deliberate grief work. And we used the washing line thing that you talked about. And I set up all my photographs and letters and cards he'd sent me. And, you know, we drew grief. Each of us drew our grief and talked about it. And then we talked through that washing line. And that was 7 years on, I think we did that. And I was really grateful because I got my wedding photos out, which had been put away for 7 years. And I thought I'd be highly triggered. And Richard wrote me a letter before I opened the box because he wanted me to know, you know, that he was there to support me. And I wasn't triggered at all. I wasn't triggered at all. It was just, okay, these are okay now. Yeah.
Wow.
Even though I still felt we were in a new match.
Yes. And hearing that, Fran, I've got tears in my eyes right now because, wow. I remember that SASH conference now. And since you bring it up, I do remember y'all being there and that being where I met you. And at the time, and I don't mean this like I'm patting myself on the back, but at the time, really nobody was talking about grief in this context for the coupleship, from a couple's perspective and how couples can grieve together. And in fact, the SASH, they turned me down for actually doing a talk, and I got to do one of those table exercises, which was fun, but it was just so foreign. And later I'm thinking about the last time I saw you in person. You were here in Texas with the Naked Truth Project doing a grief retreat with a bunch of ladies.
Yeah.
And how the pieces come together and how now it is such a standard part of the work being done and the healing that comes from it. But it's because people like you were brave enough to face these things and go through it yourself first.
Yeah.
It's just a beautiful story, Fran. Yeah. Which kind of brings me to the post-traumatic growth. Carol, our friend, Carol, the coach, Carol Sheets, she considers you and Richard the poster children of post-traumatic growth in recovery after betrayal. And I'm just wondering, what did post-traumatic growth and that transformation look like for you and for Richard?
Oh, well, it was a new relationship, certainly. It affected our relationship. And I've already mentioned I was more compassionate. I was less judgmental. And we both, you know, we call the groups at Naked Truth Wholehearted and Whole Life. And that sort of journey to authenticity, to being whole, became something that both of us were passionate about. And we knew that we could do some of it together, but we still had to do our own bits. But the good thing was we always talked about it. We always had those conversations. And then I guess I'd done the Bravehearts mentor. I'd done Donna's course because if I'm truly honest, I had always wanted to work with betrayed partners or betrayed people, betrayed women, because of my two previous marriages. I'd had a solicitor who worked with me through a very difficult breakup, and she worked with she used to do voluntary work with Women's Aid, which is a group that supports abused women in the UK. And I joined that group when I first retired in order to support, but it didn't do what I wanted to do. So in a sense, that passion for working with betrayed women happened, but not with the genre that I expected. So, you know, it just wasn't my plan exactly, but I did the coaching and I did the APSATs and loved it. But Richard was just so interested in the APSATs training that he said, I'm going to do it too. I'm going to do it, because if I'm going to work with men, yeah, I want to do it in a partner-sensitive way. So he committed to doing that. What surprised me was he chose to get certified as well. It wasn't enough for him just to do the training. He wanted the certification. And that was his choice. I was so proud of him. I've always been so proud of him since, the work he's done in recovery.
Yes. And then the two of you were able to work individually and together with many, many people. And take that hope that,
Now, Richard was in quite a lot of demand. He worked with a lot of other therapists as well, other female therapists, because, he was such an, Kat used to call him a unicorn. You know, there aren't many around like him.
Right.
Loved the work. He loved the work. And in a way, it kept us both safe. Not that I needed that for trust. I had absolute trust. I knew that if anything went wrong, it would be because of something internal that he needed to deal with. I think forgiveness was the harder bit. Maybe because
Milton had said to us, speak to forgiveness a bit?
Yeah.
Could you speak to that issue of forgiveness? Yeah.
I think forgiveness had, in my head, it was like saying it didn't matter. And I understand that forgiveness is meant to be for yourself, but I could never find those words to say to him, I forgive you. But I think he knew. I could say I understand, and I needed to understand rather than forgive. But I have had to do a lot of work on forgiveness and try to understand the different aspects of forgiveness. And, you know, they're just words, aren't they, until you dig into it and say, well, what does this actually mean? And I'm grateful that many of the webinars that we do at Naked Truth dig into those topics, trust and forgiveness and grief and intimacy, anorexia, and those difficult parts of recovery, you know. Certainly our difficult part of recovery in the early days.
Yeah. Mm. And just to plug another session of this summit, Kat, who Fran has been referring to, Kat, who she works with at the Naked Truth Project, Kat's session for this summit is on the topic of forgiveness. So folks listening to this, you'll want to be sure and catch that as well, because it is such a powerful subject to deal with. Fran, I want to say that, you know, meeting you and Richard, so I met you at SASH. I guess I met Richard for the first time when y'all were in Houston, for the CSASE conference. Yeah. And we were able to have dinner together at Milton's home and, met you guys there, I believe. Yeah. And from the very beginning, what I experienced being with the two of you was a shared passion that spilled over into love for one another and a love for this work and the people that you both served in this work. And it made it so that I looked forward to seeing you guys, whether it was through a screen like this, which often that's the case for us, or last year when you were both were in Texas, and we need more people like you with that passion and that love. And Richard, I want you to know that you and Richard both have had such an impact, far more reaching than what you could know. And I'm one of those people. Oh yes.
Well, in a way,
people know who you are.
Yeah. Seems an odd thing to say, but what we've been through is a gift in my current situation. Being able to know that Richard is remembered in a community is something that helps me too.
That makes sense. Yeah. Well, Fran, as we're wrapping up our time here, I'm wondering if you might want to just offer the couples who are listening some final words of hope and encouragement. What might you say to them?
What might I say? I would think I'd say that everybody's recovery is different. Don't do anything that doesn't feel right for you. And be prepared to accept that there's a cornucopia of stuff out there, of interventions, of books, of resources. And be prepared to be creative about it. Have a good look round. Find something that suits. Pick what you want. You don't have to work through a workbook from A to B, all the way through. Pick what you need, because I think that develops an awareness inside you of who am I and what bits do I need to work on and what bits do we need to work on. I get kind of worried when people say, we need to do communication. And it's not always about communication. It's usually about far more than that. So be prepared to open the whole thing and try silly things like paired walks and going on picnics together and using conversation cards. Play the game of building a coupleship, because many people don't get that opportunity.
Wow. I love that. Play the game of building a coupleship. That's wonderful. Mm. Well, Fran, my friend, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for your work and your your service, and thank you for sharing your memories of Richard with us. It's been a treasure. I appreciate you.
Thank you for asking me and giving me the opportunity, Jake. Thank you. I'm grateful.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of Betrayal Recovery Radio, hosted by Dr. Jake Porter. If you value the content we've shared today, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review. This helps others find the show, and we greatly appreciate it. For more resources, visit APSATS.org. That's APSATS.org.